Silence!
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Pride Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 55 of Nerd Pride Radio. 55, first, it's a Capricorn number in base 10. What's that? Well, that means that if you square the number, in this case, 55 times 55 equals 3,025, you can then break that 3,025 down into 30 and 25, and when you add those two back together, you get 55. Really? See, that's a thing? That's a property of numbers? To me, that's just doing numerology now. We're calling it math. I don't get that. But once I had that thought, I decided to look up numerology and see if there's anything significant about 55 in numerology. And what I didn't realize is I was amazed at how tied in, at least the sites I went to, how tied into Christianity numerology was. And apparently, in that interpretation, 55 is all about the Virgin Mary. I don't get it. But we're here. So you need to ask me how I'm doing today. Go on. Ask me. I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd. Plus, there are probably like seven other kinds of nerd. I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my noggin anymore. Oh, as always, you're listening to the best-smelling podcast on the internet. That's right. Nerd Pride Radio smells like the bittersweet hints of autumn marking the end of a long, fine, beautiful summer. Ah, all right. Hold on. I have to set up a timer. Well, a timer, Mike? Why would you do that? I'm just filling time while I figure out how my timer works. Okay, go. All right. Here's what I'm doing with this episode. I have so much stuff to talk to you about because it's been 3 months, because I took the summer off. Like, I always take the summer off. Even though I always promise you I'm not going to take the summer off, I always do take the summer off. So I did. And I have been carrying around my pocket mod with me, like I told you guys in previous episodes, carrying my pocket mod, and I've just been jotting down stuff that I think about that I want to talk about on the podcast. And now I have like 33 items on that list. So here's what I'm going to do. I want to cover everything today, if I can. But that's a lot, and I ramble. You guys know how I ramble. So I am setting a timer. And every segment in this show is capped at 3 minutes. If that timer goes off, I'm going to give myself, what do you guys think is fair? 8 words, 10 words to finish talking about what I'm talking about, and then boom, move on to the next one, whether we're done or not. All right, because I got a lot of stuff to cover. I don't want to miss anything. So I figure if I got 30-something things, 3 minutes apiece, not all of them are going to take the 3 minutes. I'm thinking maybe we could fill up a good hour here this time. So this is going to be our Nerd Pride Radio lightning round. That means also, by the way, normally the show's half for me, half for you, and I do a Podomatic at the end and all that. No Podomatic today. Sorry, R2. I know. You'll wait till next time. We'll be back with the Podomatic and R2 next week in full force. Gloriously. I promise you. All right. See? That didn't take me 3 minutes. Let's go ahead and reset the timer. We'll go on to the next one. Reset. Go. All right. Technical difficulties. Here's what happened. My computer crashed. Probably like 2 weeks after the last episode, because as I get everything recovered, it doesn't make any difference. Computer crashed at the beginning of the summer, and here's where the 2 week reference comes in. When I went and restored all of my backup stuff, I'm missing the last two scripts. So the script for episode 53 and the script for episode 54 are just missing off the computer. Therefore, I've lost that amount of time. And that means, here's the sad part, I'm missing some Podomatics. I don't know which ones, all right? If I go back and listen to those episodes, I'll figure out which ones from those episodes I need to cross off to the list, cross off of the list. And I'll do that. But it also means I know some of you guys sent me some Podomatics that I then put on the list. And some of them, I still have the original private messages from you, and I've gone back and recovered those. But some of them, I probably deleted them when I was cleaning up. So I don't know what's missing and what's not. I feel really, really bad about that. I don't know how to make it up to you, other than to promise you, hey, we'll do lots of Podomatic next time. You guys will all get your chance. If you want to send me more, I'm always here for you. In the meantime, is that it for that topic? Boy, we're going to get through these quick. This is awesome. That's my technical difficulties. And so this is a brand new computer. This is the first time I've recorded anything on it, and the microphone appears to be working because I'm seeing movement on the screen. So this is all good. If things sound a little rough, if anything's a little off, we'll blame it on the new computer and not on me being rusty from taking such a long break. How's that? I see. I'm going to figure out a way to fill these awkward pauses while I do this. See, look at that. We have a whole minute left in that segment. All right, start over. Here we go. Taking my summers off. Yeah, you know, I kind of touched on this already, but I have got to stop promising you guys anything because, yeah, here it was. I was all set that this time, you know, I already had the fingertips in place. I was going to do some short episodes, fill up some time with some stuff. I thought about doing some interviews with my children and my nieces and nephews while I was down in Texas. We'd do some gaming talk. We'd put in some little short stuff. And then the computer died. And the computer died, and it took me a good – oh, I wound up getting a substitute computer from my parents because my dad had a beautiful Windows 8 machine that he just – oh, you know what? He just couldn't handle Windows 8. Here, you guys want it? We'll take it. All right. But unfortunately, after I got everything set up on that machine, I went to go restore my backup and found out it only had a 250-megabyte hard drive. Couldn't even hold on my music, much less the podcasts and the photos and everything else. So that machine was not working for us. I tried some workarounds. Ultimately, we just decided to buy a new machine. So finally, a little over a month ago, I finally got a new machine that'll do everything I needed to do. That's what I'm working on right now. But it means that in the meantime, everything was just a nice convenient excuse to put the podcast off. So I am sorry to you guys. I didn't mean to do that. And it also means that next summer, if we get to next summer, and I start promising you guys that I'm not going to let you down this time, that I'm going to make a new effort, I'm turning over a new leaf, this is going to be a fresh start, just know that I'm lying. You know I'm lying. And I hate it. I hate it because my summers is my family time. My kids are home from school. My wife is home from school. And when I come home, I come home for lunch. Normally, that's when I record this, is over lunch. Everyone's at school. Everyone's at work. So I come home and I take an extra long lunch, usually on a Thursday, and I come home and I record. It works out perfectly. During the summer, I come home and it's like, well, I could sit down for an hour or two and record, but, well, my family's here. We could be hanging out. We could watch a movie together. We could play a game. We could do anything. And so I wind up not recording over the summer. I mean, well, but you know how it is. Okay, see, I was trying to stretch that one out. I'm just hoping this timer goes off. I want to hear the noise. I don't even know what it sounds like when the timer goes off. But so far, I haven't had anything that has to fill 3 whole minutes. So, all right, we'll move on. Oh, wow, look at that. 24 seconds left. Should I wait it out? No cheating here. Reset. Start. Here we go. And now the phone rings. Hold on a second. ISD, this is Mike. And I'm back. Oh, sorry about that. Okay. Anyway, the next section is how I spent my summer vacation. You guys want to know what I did all summer? This is awesome. We went down to Texas, as I kind of hinted at, and we had an entire swimming vacation while we were down there. It was spectacular. We visited all sorts of watering holes, got to hang out with my brother and his wife and my parents and my 8 nieces and nephews. And we didn't see my other brother. He didn't come down to visit. But you know, other than that, perfect trip. So we had a good time. And while we were down there, my oldest son proposed to his girlfriend. So she's no longer a girlfriend. She's a fiance. And that was really cool. So we're all very, very happy for them. Let's see what else. Oh, God. We went to we went up to Sturgis, not for Sturgis, but we went because my wife has family that lives in Sturgis, and one of her cousins was getting married. And so we went up to Sturgis, and we hung out in the Black Hills and did some of the touristy stuff while we were up there. But then, here was the best part. Every time we go to the Black Hills, and we've been there, you know, four or five times, every time we go up there, we tell ourselves, oh, you know what, we should stop at Custer State Park. We should go in and see Custer and see all the stuff. And we never go. And this time, we went. In fact, not only did we go, but we managed to rent a cabin inside the park itself that didn't cost us an arm and a leg. Bizarre. Like, I went and searched for cabins, and I found this one, and so I booked it, and it was no big deal. And I didn't think anything of it, and I was paying like $150 for it for a night. And, you know, when you've got six people sleeping in it, it had room for 10. And I'm like, God, this is a deal and a half. I did not realize that every other cabin in that park, you know, easily $200, $300, $500 for a night. The only reason we got this one is it's the bunkhouse. It's like they have this big, fancy mansion-like cabin with all sorts of bedrooms built for like three families to go into it. And then the bunkhouse is the place where you stick all the kids or grandkids. And so it's just a giant room with four sets of bunk beds in it, plus a pull-out couch. And it was great. I mean, it had, you know, air conditioning and cable TV and hot and cold running water. We were happy. I mean, it was an awesome, awesome setup for us because all we needed was a place to crash while, you know, and then go out during the day. Had a great time. Holy cow. I'm telling you, we got up in the morning, made some coffee. We went out and sat on our front porch to drink coffee, and a buffalo walked across our lawn. That's how cool Custer State Park is. Buffalo, all by himself, just wandering through. Supposedly, they tell us that there was a mountain lion living on the ridge out behind our cabin. We never saw the guy. So, but supposedly he was there. So we'll take comfort in that. What else was it? I mean, Custer, have you ever been there? This is where you do the wind is, it's out by, you know, it's Black Hills, so it's out near Mount Rushmore. And, oh, that's my time? Oh my God, I had so much more for this summer. I guess we're done. Darn it. All right, let's try again. Next topic. The storms. I'm not going to spend too much time on this. While we were in Texas on vacation, just before we left for Texas, there were storms in our area that hit a little town called Pilger, which is, you know, in this region. And you guys probably saw that on the national news, and Pilger got pretty much wiped out by the tornadoes. And that was scary and horrible. And then, while we were on vacation, hail came through, and we had hurricanes and hail. Well, it's not really a hurricane. I'm sorry. That's a coastal thing. But we had a huge series of thunderstorms, and all this hail came down and tore up our house. I mean, terrible. We're down in Texas, and my brother-in-law is calling us, giving us updates on what they can see and what they think's happened. It turns out by the time we got back, we're going to have to get a new roof on the house. We have to replace two sides of siding. It's like $15,000 worth of damage. Two of our cars got totaled out, which, I mean, when I say totaled out, they're still drivable. I mean, it's just dents and one broken windshield and this kind of stuff, and we're getting it fixed up and all that, but enough to total the car. So insurance paid us out on those, totaled out our camper. I mean, it's just icky. And, you know, and it's nothing I shouldn't complain, because it's nothing drastic. It's nothing deadly. I mean, yes, it's a lot of money and all that, but that's what insurance is for. And, you know, there's a lot of out of pocket, but we'll get through it, whatever. But it was just horrifying to come back to that. I mean, like I say, there we were on vacation, and I'm calling, you know, just after the storm was over, I'm calling in and putting in claims on my house and putting in claims on my car, and I haven't even been home to see the damage. I won't be home to see the damage for another week. And so that was yet another reason that I kind of put off the podcast a little bit. I'm not trying to make excuses, but I am. It was just a lot of stuff going on. And again, we've gotten the cars fixed up, and we've made arrangements for the house, and things are all going to happen. It's, you know, it's not, again, there's no holes in the roof. We didn't have our house carried away. Like, I mean, we honestly, there's people that my wife works with who their house literally got completely wiped off the map by the tornadoes. So, I mean, there's people in way worse straits than we are. But, man, it was just overwhelming. You know what? I'm going to stop this topic right now. I'm getting myself depressed, and this needs to be an upbeat podcast because apparently I need to speak faster because I ran out of time on that last one. Hold on again. All right, so enough of that one. Can we move on to something happy? Yeah, okay, next one. I heart Twitter. That's what it says on my little pocket mod here. I heart Twitter. I really do. I don't know what it is about Twitter. It's probably just the way I'm using it. But I finally, someone, was it Ronster? Somebody asked me if Nerd Pride had a Twitter account, and I said, well, you know what? I've been meaning to make one. It's about time. So, at Nerd Pride Radio, if you want to find me on Twitter. And so I've signed up for it, and I've been tweeting occasionally, and not real heavy, but, you know, a little stuff here and there. And the way I'm using it, I'm following some of my friends, but also I'm just following things I like and people I like, people that I find funny. That's what I'm really looking for, is I just want to be entertained. And I just like my Twitter feed. I just, you know, I've got some science feeds in there and some other stuff, and just, you get, anytime I go to Twitter, I'm just guaranteed that, hey, look, here's a dozen new things of, you know, something funny someone I like said, something interesting from this science thing, something, you know, math and numbers related ones, and I just really enjoy it. Something in a way that I've never enjoyed Facebook, and I don't understand what the difference is, but with Facebook, I've had a Facebook account for years, and I signed up for the Nerd Pride Facebook account, and I've never really been excited about using it. I've never been really excited about following it. I like it for the instant messaging aspect, and that's about it. And occasionally I'll stop in and see, you know, photos and stuff, which is one of the main uses of Facebook. I get that. But Twitter, something about it just really excites me. I enjoy checking my Twitter feed on a regular basis. And again, you can't keep up with everything, obviously, so I miss a ton of stuff. But whenever I tune in, I just read through the last, you know, 15 or 20 of them, enjoy myself, move on, time for the next thing. So I'm having fun with it. And again, hey, at Nerd Pride Radio on Twitter. Come find me. And, of course, also Facebook.com/Nerd Pride Radio. But I never use that one. But Twitter, I might. You know, tweet me there. I'll probably notice it, I'm guessing. So was that it on Twitter? Oh, man, we are going to get through the whole list today, I think. Yep, 40 seconds left. Look at that. Reset. Go. All right. The next one. Oh, this is the best. I'm glad I already brought up the pocket mod. All right. You're going to love this. My oldest son comes to me and asks me a question about the Red Hulk. And he said, well, I think the Red Hulk was actually, and I can't remember who he named. And I said, really? Hold on, let me check. And I literally, as we're talking, I reach into my wallet, I pull out my pocket mod, my little, and for those of you who don't remember the pocket mod, it's just a little folded piece of paper. You fold it up and make one little cut in, and it works like a little notebook that you can keep track of stuff on. And I use it for my shopping lists and my Podomatic entries, well, podcast entries, and just anything I don't want to forget goes in here. And so he says something about Red Hulk. And I said, well, let me check. I pull out my pocket mod. I flip open to the center of it, and I check my little list of things. I go, yeah, it says right here that Red Hulk is General Ross. I floored him, absolutely stunned him. He's like, wait, why would you be carrying that information around with you? Why would you possibly? I mean, just complete random coincidence. I had just, like, 2 days before that, had a conversation with Joel at work about Red Hulk, and I was completely misguided on Red Hulk. Anyway, it doesn't make any difference. I thought Red Hulk was related to, I thought it was actually Bruce Banner or somehow related to Bruce Banner directly, and turns out it wasn't, and Joel set me straight on that. And so I thought that was so fascinating, I decided to just jot it down because I wanted to talk about it on the podcast, that I just thought it was an interesting thing. And so I happened to have Red Hulk is General Ross written in my pocket mod, and my son happens to ask me a question about it that night, and I got to completely knock him out with that information. I thought that was absolutely beautiful. So pocket mods, not only useful, but they will amaze your friends. Isn't that what you want? Don't you want to look like you're so encyclopedic or so psychic that you knew their question was coming and you researched it and prepared for it right there? Oh, it was gorgeous. It really was. All right, how much time do we have left on that one? Oh, look at that. 30 seconds left. All right, reset. Go. All right, next one. Let's see. Oh, I ran out of podcasts. Oh, that was so weird. I, you know, I like to listen to podcasts. And part of it, I mean, I ran out of podcasts and because I had like the whole backlog of Harmontown all lined up. And then suddenly I got all the way through Harmontown. I got all the way caught up to the end. And now I'm just listening to them once a week as they come out and still enjoying them, by the way. You know, I've had problems with it in the past, but it's fun. It's enjoyable. And so once I got caught up on that, well, it turns out that over the summer, The Bugle, one of my favorite podcasts, is taking a hiatus for the summer because John Oliver started his new show on HBO, which, by the way, is brilliant. I still don't have HBO. All I can catch is the segments that they release on YouTube, and they do usually a big chunk, like a 15-minute, whatever, one of their big segments, they do like a 15-minute chunk every week, and I follow that religiously because I love John Oliver. I love his new show, which is Last Week Tonight. Great stuff. But because of the new show, because of other things going on, The Bugle's on hiatus. So, okay, there's a weekly podcast I don't have anymore. And then Walking the Room, another one, that one of my favorites, one of the first ones I'll listen to if it's available, Walking the Room is on hiatus because, well, Greg's going to be in Australia for, you know, most of the summer. And so, okay, they're on hiatus too, which, all right, by the way, let me just say, I didn't even put this together until just this moment. I feel your pain. I didn't even realize, and it's not that I've been angry with The Bugle or with Walking the Room. It's just that disappointment of going, oh yeah, no new podcast this week. Darn it. And now I realize I'm doing the exact same thing to you guys. I never made the connection. I am so sorry, guys. Cause yeah, that it sucks. It sucks. And the worst part is The Bugle and Walking the Room both are releasing weekly or semi-weekly updates that it's usually just like a best of or some classic thing that they did or just a reminder of, hey, we're on hiatus, but we'll be back. We promise. And so every week I get a little download that I'm not going to listen to just to remind me that, oh yeah, you still don't get one of your favorite podcasts. Ha ha. Ugh, frustrating. So, in the meantime, what's the one? Darn it. I can't remember. There was the one storytelling podcast. I think I told you guys about it already, but for some reason I can't remember the title of it. Getting on with James Urbaniak. I went through all of the back episodes of that one, and he only releases a new one like every 3 or 4 months. So, all right, now I'm caught up on that. I think I've got, Kumail. Kumail Nanjiani. I really gotten into him through, Harmontown. Kumail is my favorite part of Harmontown. Kumail is the everyman. He is me. He is my... I'll talk about Kumail later because I know I have another segment for him. But now we have to reset. Next segment. Rio 2 and the X-Men. All right. I told you, I think on the very last podcast I did, I was asked where I would go in my hovercraft. And I told you I would take it to the drive-in movies. I would take it to the drive-in movies in the little next town over from us. They still have a old-style classic drive-in movie theater with a huge concession stand and this huge, glorious, refurbished screen, and it's wonderful. And I told you guys that that's what I would do with my hovercraft. Well, I got my hovercraft in bright yellow, and I drove that sucker over to the drive-in theater, and I got to watch Rio 2 and the new X-Men movie, X-Men Days of Future Past. And this is going to be, if I were doing my regular segments, this would be my science fiction double feature. Let me tell you what, Rio 2, because this drive-in movie, usually this theater does a kid's movie followed by a grown-up movie. That's just the way it works. Rio 2 is the absolute worst example of pandering to children I have ever seen in my life. Rio 2, well, okay. Let's qualify that by saying I haven't seen either of the Planes movies. So, you know, those could beat it. I have no idea. Rio 2 was horrifying. It was horrifyingly bad. It was so bad. And it was, they had to have a section where, I don't care if I'm doing spoilers. They had to have a whole section where, hey, look, all of our problems can be solved with soccer. You know why? Because of the World Cup being in Brazil. So here we are in the Amazon rainforest, and oh yeah, all of our problems will be solved with soccer. It was such a blatant, horrifying tie-in. It was gross. The movie was pandering and stupid with the lowest common denominator jokes. mean, it was clearly just a cash grab. Clearly. It was so bad that when we got done with it, even my kids, my 8-year-old and my 11-year-old, actually had to come up to me afterwards and go, that wasn't a very good movie, was it? Which is weird because, you know, they're young. And when you're young and you go see an animated movie and you see all the big bright colors and everything going on, well, you love everything because you're a kid and you're not really that discriminating yet. And I think, especially for the 11-year-old, I think this was his first experience with, wow, they can make really bad movies? That's terrible. Yeah, for me, it was Fox and the Hound. That was the one where I learned. I think I was 11 or 12, about the same age. And Fox and the Hound, I know some people love it. I'm sure you love it. Whatever. If you love it, you're stupid. Fox and the Hound was boring and dull, especially if you're a 12-year-old. I hated that movie. It was the first time I went out to see an animated feature and went, wow, that was kind of crap, wasn't it? Okay, but enough about that. I'm going to run out of time here. I got to fit two movies in. X-Men Days of Future Past, spectacular. Oh, just watch it for Quicksilver. Quicksilver is everything in that movie. Avengers got a tough time trying to beat that. That was too many words. All right, let's move on. Start. Oh, hey. Next one says, check in with the forums. I don't know if anyone's actually going to post anything, but we'll go look. So, ready? Refresh. I just decided something new. I decided I was going to announce when I started recording, and if anyone wanted to add anything. Stan asks, will there be cake? No, Stan, there's never cake. Cake is a lie, obviously. I should have finished reading. I was told there'd be refreshments. I like cake. That's awesome. And then Stan says, talk about the Guardians of the Galaxy movie if you've seen it. Something fresh to add to the notes from months ago. Oh, Guardians of the Galaxy. Okay, I haven't seen it. And in fact, it's on my list, Stan. You are psychic and prescient. Let me go ahead and move that up the list or just cross it off the list, whatever. Here we go. The item is, why am I not watching Guardians of the Galaxy right now? Oh, this movie looks so good. Have you seen the trailers? Have you heard the buzz? Everybody loves this movie. Everybody except, go check out Rotten Tomatoes. There's one idiot who hates that movie. And go read his review, and it's clear that he's an obvious idiot. He's a contrarian who simply wants to dislike things because he knows it will generate clicks and discussion. Everybody in the world loves this movie. And I heard Kumail on one of his podcasts mention the end of the movie. He says, make sure you stay after the trailer. Make sure you're get all the way through the credits. You've got to watch that final scene because it is the most important end of credits scene Marvel has ever done. So that's pretty big words. So my son went and saw it with his girlfriend, fiance. And so I asked him afterwards, and I said, dude, did you stay for the end credits scene? He said, yeah. I said, was it big? Was it huge? He goes, whatever. I mean, it was ordinary. I'm like, what? What? I said, okay, did you stay all the way to the very end of the credits? He said, well, no, they had the end scene right in the middle of the credits. I'm like, what, are you an idiot? You know they always do one right at the very, very end. Even if they do one earlier, they're going to do another one. He's like, well, you know, she was tired and she was ready to leave. I'm like, why would you listen to her at a Marvel movie? What were you thinking? And so then he took his younger brother and his brother's girlfriend, took them to the drive-in to see it like just a couple weeks ago. And so he wound up watching Guardians of the Galaxy at the end. Again, and when he came home after that, when he said, oh, the end credits scene, I stayed all the way through. He said, oh, yeah, a huge, huge, most important end credits scene ever, ever. I'm like, oh, God, why am I not watching this movie? I haven't seen it yet, but I want to so bad. I just, oh, I can't even take it. And it's one of those things that the CGI on this one, just like the CGI on, another day, guys. All right. This is going to get frustrating, isn't it? All right, here we go. All right. Next one. That was checking in on the forums. So, the next one is, all right. This one won't take long. The word orientated. Orientated. Does it sound right to you? Yeah, because, you know, I just went through orientation, so I got orientated. Or the opposite of it would be disorientated or disorientating. Disorientating. It hurts me even to say it. Do you Do you know what I'm getting at here? All right. Because orientated, you mean oriented? See, that's the proper use of that word, oriented. I'm not disorientated. I'm disoriented. All right. That's just me. It's been a pet peeve of mine forever. I mean, I can remember 20 years ago. Yeah, it was 20 years ago. My first real job after I got out of college, I went through orientation, and I remember hearing people use the word getting orientated. Orientated? Really? Oriented? It just drove me crazy at the time. And for 20 years, it's bothered me every time. People use it all the time. And so it just came up a few weeks ago over the summer, and that's why I jotted it down. And I got so – it was just, again, it's just that little nitpicky little thing. And so I go to look it up. And it turns out that according to the dictionary, both are considered correct. All right, both are correct. I'll give you that. That's fine. Common usage. I'm a big proponent of the evolving nature of English and the fact that literally now means figuratively. I get that. You know what? It's all cool with me. I'll give you that one. But I assumed that oriented would have been the first version of this. But then because of things like orientation, we kind of back-assed it into orientated and stuff like that. No, it turns out that it's not the recent phenomenon I thought it was. Apparently, the dual versions of oriented and orientated have been around for like 200, 300, 400 years. Really? There's something so disappointing about that I don't even feel like I'm allowed to have a pet peeve on it anymore. I mean, now it's no longer me saying, God, just use the correct version. Why can't you pick the right word? No, it's no longer that. Now it's just me going, why do we have to have two words? Can't we streamline English? Now I feel, I don't know. Now I feel even more pedantic than I normally do. By the way, I wish I could remember what it was the other night. My second son, Aiden, he came in and I said something to him and he gave me, just some little joke correction where he corrects me to the proper form of the word. And so I waved my arms in the air and I went, ooh, my name's Aiden. I'm a pedantic asshole. And it was, oh, darn it. There's a great story that goes with this. You'll never hear it now. Start. All right. We got to get through these people. Spirit stones. Ugh, spirits. I'm ashamed. I am absolutely ashamed. If you want to see what kind of horrible, horrible, sexist human being I am, go look up the game Spirit Stones. Right? It's a Droid app. And that's where I play it. And play it on my tablet. And it's just sad. It's just, here's the thing. When we got to Texas, my brother was playing Spirit Stones. So, no matter what you think of me, let's just remember that Kyle did it first. And he taught it to me, so really, he's a worse person than I am, all right? But go look at Spirit Stones, and it is a collectible card puzzle battling game. It has like a couple of different mechanics in it. But the main thing is you collect cards to form your battle team, and then your battle team come in four different colors, and then when you go to do your battle, you have this puzzle board down below where you have to match up colors, and there's a whole system for it, and they've got little special tools in it and linking things. But you match up colors to knock as many blocks out as you can. And so if I knock out eight red blocks, then that's eight hits from my warrior. If I knock out, five blue blocks, that's five hits from my mage. Whatever. And it allows you to do battle with whatever stupid little creatures they have. And all of this in order to earn more coins and more gems, in order to buy more cards and to do, it's one of those online games that it's just a money suck. That's all it is. And you can download it for free and you can play it for free. I've never spent a dime on it. I've been playing it for 3 months now, almost 3 months. I have never put any money into it. You can enjoy yourself perfectly well without spending any money. For God's sake, don't give in to that temptation. But there is something about the Pokemon nature of the collecting mechanic and the bejeweled style nature of the matching battle mechanic that just keeps me hooked and keeps me going. And I've gotten kind of tired of it. It's been 3 months. I've gotten kind of tired of it. I think Kyle quit playing entirely. But there's just something addictive about it. And so I still go in once a day. I go in, I check, I play the Devil's Dungeon, and then I get back out. I don't spend a whole lot of time with it anymore. But here's the horrible part of this game. the battle cards are mostly female, and you can advance your cards. You can evolve them and advance them, and they get stronger and stronger. And there's like four steps for all the basic cards. And here's the worst part. The basic card is usually a very hot, sexy woman in some provocative pose that's supposed to be battle-related with her weapons and her armor, but it's all about the sex. And then each progressive evolution, as the card advances, the more powerful she gets, the less clothes she has on. I feel like I should qualify this, but I won't. You'll have to check it out for yourself. Damn. Let's start the next section. Wow. I'm going to finish all my stories before I get to the good part. Okay. The Advanced Class Guide. The Advanced Class Guide for Pathfinder is either out now or just coming out now. All I know is I don't have one in my hands yet, but I did pre-order it, so it'll be coming to me very soon. You know I love Pathfinder, and the Advanced Class Guide is 10 new classes for Pathfinder, including the Shaman, the Swashbuckler, the Hunter, all sorts of other stuff. And at first, some of them, like the Hunter, for example, the Hunter is, you know, he's specifically a hunter and has an animal companion with lots of powers that go with that. And I'm like, how is that too much different than the Ranger? How is that, you know, between Ranger and Druid, can't I already get to this? And what it looks like they've done, and I've read all the previews for it, and I've read all their sample characters, their new iconic characters. And what they've done, though, is for each of these concepts, not only most of them take from two other different classes and kind of meld them, but then each one of these has to have something unique about it, something, some new mechanic that makes it original and makes it worthwhile all by itself. So, for example, the Gunslinger was all about not just using firearms, but the grit mechanic to make firearms work. That's kind of cool. When they came out with witches, the witch class, the special thing was the hexes. That was something new, something unique and original in how they operated that made witches work. So with the Hunter, for example, and again, I could be getting any of this wrong because I'm fuzzy on details. But if I understand correctly, the Hunter is a lot about not just the Ranger style tracking and hunting, but really big about the animal companion and not just having an animal companion, but having it, having teamwork feats that you get a teamwork feat that you automatically share with your companion animal. And then the two of you can do all sorts of amazing stuff as a unit that, tactics wise just hasn't been explored yet. Stuff like that. The Swashbuckler has I can't remember what it is, a style, panache, some kind of pool of the ability to do just amazing swashbuckling kind of stuff and actually have it work and get bonuses for it. Cool stuff like that. And so I'm really excited about it. And even more than that, they've got the 10 classes. And what really sold me is I found out that the initial run here, the first printing, they screwed up the cover. So the Advanced Class Guide, instead of saying their usual Pathfinder logo underneath it, instead, it says, like, I think it says Pathfinder Adventure Series. All right, got to end there. But that's one of the exciting things is the is that they have an error on the cover that they decided not to fix. All right, got to move on. Oh, hey, but to move on, the next one is one of the iconic classes from the new Advanced Class Guide. I just thought this was fascinating, and they have the whole write-up on her. If you want to go check out the Pathfinder blog at paizo.com, I think it's paizo.com/blog or anyway, just go to paizo.com and look for the Pathfinder blog. You'll find it. And if you go back through the blog, they have little discussions about all 10 of the new classes from the Advanced Class Guide. And each one, I mean, it's an actual developer discussion of, hey, here's what we were kind of looking at, and here's how the first few playtests went, and here's how we've modified things. It's fascinating behind-the-scenes gaming mechanic sort of stuff that I really love. But then also, in addition to having those write-ups and explanations for each of the classes, they also have the new iconic character for each class. Hold on just a second. Sorry about that. I needed a drink. But hey, I'll give myself an extra 5 seconds when this timer goes off because I forgot to pause the timer. All right. So anyway, the Iconics are the iconic characters, the ones that are pictured with each class when they're first discussed. And they all have names and histories and all sorts of stuff. And the one I found most fascinating in this newest one is Shardra the Shaman. She is a dwarven shaman in the new advanced class guide. And specifically, this is specifically written as a transgendered character. Bizarrely so. I mean, and when I say bizarrely, I mean as in it sounds ham-fisted to say. It sounds like that they're doing some, you know, they're trying to force some sort of inclusion or whatever, but it's not about that. Go read the character, and it is very sensitively done, appropriately done, and it works really, really well within the context of the Pathfinder world. I'm amazed at how natural it is, and I'm not going to, you know what, go read it for yourself, because I've only got 3 minutes per topic here. But it was just really cool that the idea that they can handle an issue like that in an iconic in a rule book and make it work. I really, really liked it. I think it's a great character and a great idea, and I'm glad they did it the way they did. But it also is another thing that reminds me that when we play Pathfinder, we're not playing a historical medieval game. Oh, damn it. I should write this one down because I want to come back to this on a later podcast. New topic. Gen Con. Gen Con 2015. All right, Gen Con 2014 is going on right now. Today. It starts now. This is Gen Con. So if you're there, oh, I am so jealous. Power to you, man. I love Gen Con. I've been twice. I went in 2011 with my oldest son, and I went in 2008, I think, with my brother when Animal Cast, our previous podcast, was actually nominated for an award. Ooh, we're fancy. And so I've been twice. And the first time I went with my brother and my mom, who that was her gift to us, is we weren't going to be able to make it to the awards ceremony. She wanted to take us. Awesome. And she was, I'm not trying to be glib about my mom. I just want to save time here, which I'm not doing by explaining to you why I'm being glib. God, this is so hard. And so, the first time we went, it was just really quick. We went in, we didn't really schedule any big events. We kind of found what we could find and we walked the floor and saw all the vendors and we played some demonstration games and we had a good time. I mean, it was awesome. But when I went with my son, we did it a little bit better. We figured out how to, we got ourselves into some games that were interesting to us. We made sure we scheduled things appropriately so we get all the vendor time on the floor that we wanted and still be able to hit events around the convention. Wonderful time. Made sure we got tons and tons of pictures. Anybody who was in costume who was willing to stop and pose with us, we loved the costumes. If you are a person who goes to Gen Con or any convention and you dress up for it and you put in the effort on those, bless you. I love you. I love the work you put in. The costumes fascinate me. You guys are awesome. And so now, my next son is now 16 years old, and so he is going to go with me to next year's Gen Con in 2015, and we're going to do it even better. We're going to stay the full 4 days. We're going to do the whole gamut. We're going to schedule ourselves for more games. We're going to get ourselves registered sooner than we did last time, and we got our tickets right away, but we didn't actually sign up for events until a little bit later. So we're going to get signed up as quickly as we can because I want to get him and I into a Pathfinder game together. Probably try out D&D 5. D&D 5 will have been around for a year by then. We'll probably play one of those games. Look for some other games that we want. And I'm making arrangements. We've been talking on the boards, and now I'm talking to you guys here, that, you know what, if you're going to be at Gen Con in 2015, if you're going to be there next year, come to the boards, hook up with us, make some arrangements. We'll find some time to just hang out for just a little bit. I mean, I would love to show up and meet up with some people and sit down and play a game of Zombie Cinema. Or I will bring Scout Camp horror game, or Pariah, another game I wrote, or we can play any game anyone wants. If we want to sit down and do some Paranoia, if we want to sit down and play some Munchkin, see, that would be the best, is everyone sit around, have some drinks, and just play Munchkin, a game you don't even have to think about that hard. Mm. New topic. Oh, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes in a recliner. Ah, I told you we'd get back to the CGI stuff. Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, for our anniversary, my wife and I drove to Omaha, and we were going to go to the Midtown Theaters there, or no, Marcus Theaters. And Marcus Theaters, they've got several theaters around Omaha. And one of them, they have a theater that's set up Alamo Drafthouse style, so that every other row of seats has been torn out. Big, you know, stadium seating on the big steep row. And then every other row of seats has been torn out and replaced with a big long bench style table, so that you have wait staff that come in and they will wait on you during the show, and they'll bring you beer and serve you dinner, bring you appetizers and whatever it is that you want. They'll serve it to you right there at your seat. And then you just get a bill at the end. You settle up. You're all good. Hang on a second. We were going to do that, but then we discovered that Marcus Theaters also had a theater full of recliners. And some of you have probably already seen this because you live in real cities. You live in big places where they have stuff. I don't. All right. This is the first time I've been to a theater with recliners. And it's, I mean, it's like a Cineplex 20. It's got 20 theaters in it, but each theater only has, because you got to fit in recliners, each theater only has about 50 to 70 seats in it. And strangely, still, as cheap as the theater here in my little town. And so you go in and you get these really nice, comfortable recliners with the push button motor, and you put your feet up and you lean back. And that is how I watched Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. It was spectacular. And we just got our regular, you know, drinks and candy before we went in. But this theater would have allowed us, if we wanted to, if you show up early, you can order your food ahead of time, and they'll, you know, just order your food and pay for it before you go in, and then they'll deliver your food to you before the trailers start running, and so you can have your dinner there in the theater if you want it. They got special trays that fit in the recliners and all this. We decided not to do that, but we could have, and I'm telling you, watching a movie in a recliner is just the best. I can't wait to go back. I really had a great time doing that. And Dawn of the Planet of the Apes is amazing. Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, one of my favorite movies of all time. The CGI in this is amazing. These are apes. These are CGI apes on screen, and they'll make you cry. They will. It was powerful. I was just floored. And I don't want to give anything away, but you know, you saw the first one, right? You saw Rise of the Planet of the Apes, and it was good, but it was, don't worry, I saved this one. New topic. Hey, rant about the CG acting in Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. I knew this would take more than one segment. Okay, here's the deal. The CG in Dawn of the Planet of the Apes is so good, it's scary. The emotions, the realism. I mean, all right, it started back with Toy Story. All right, do you remember Toy Story? And they could make toys that looked real. I tried to explain to my son how creepy it was after the movie came out. We loved Toy Story. Everybody loved Toy Story. And then you went out and you actually found Buzz and Woody dolls. You found the actual toys because they started marketing those. And it was just creepy because this is the first time that I just saw an animated film. And now when I look at the character in real life, it looks exactly like the character in the film. I mean, it is just, it's not like a cartoon that's been made 3D. No, it was like a 3D item that's been made 3D. The realism was just amazing. And they could do that with toys and make it really effective. All right. And then from toys, they moved up to bugs, and then they moved up to monsters. All right. And then that we got Gollum. You guys heard me go on about Gollum. I love Gollum. He was amazing. All right. Completely watching Gollum, completely forgot I was watching the CG character. He was just Gollum. All right. Well, the next step now is the apes. And here's the thing. The ape acting in this movie was better than the human acting. And Andy Serkis, the guy who played Caesar, the lead ape, Andy Serkis will tell you that was all about him, because he's got the body language and they used the motion capture suits, and they even had the motion capture for the face to capture the expressions. But in real life, the motion capture only does so much, especially when it comes to facial expressions. So as much as he wants to take credit for all of that, as he's just a brilliant actor, this is really, it's the CG artistry that brings out all those details. I mean, yeah, you can get motion capture down to capture an expression, a pose, but it's not going to capture the moistness in the eyes and the exact crinkles of the flesh. And the, I mean, there's so much detail that goes into it. And it made the apes more emotionally real than the people they were acting right next to, all right, which is bizarre. And so here's the deal. Do you remember, I'm going to run out of time, do you remember when it first became a big deal that, singers, pop singers, were sweetening their vocals with that they were getting things corrected and digitally punched up and they were getting sounds out of them that were beautiful, but some people said unnatural and certainly better than anything that they could produce in real life, so that their real life performances weren't as convincing. You wait. You think I'm crazy. You wait 5 years, 10 years to where they're doing that to just regular human performances, because apes is just the penultimate step. Next is going to be people. We're going to be able to create CG people on screen that you can't tell the difference between the real person and the CG person. And it's going to be to the point where even where you have a regular performance by an actor and we've got it all captured on film. And then, oh, I'm going to finish this one up. And then they come in and they punch it up. All right. They're going to punch it up with the CG and just, you know, tweak it a little bit here, tweak it a little bit there, and until CG artistry on acting will create emotions realer than real life. Going to get to the point where you know, again, it's just that moistness to the eyes, that turn of the mouth, that exact pull of the lip, that these will be CG emotion artists who know exactly what pulls the heartstrings, exactly what conveys that emotion, and what works on the audience every single time. And so they'll punch up real life performances to do that, and we won't know the difference. We won't be able to tell the difference, but we will know that for most actors, the ones that aren't punched up, the ones that don't have that CG done on them afterwards, the ones that aren't basically emotionally airbrushed, they're going to seem flat. That real acting, real natural acting is going to seem flat compared to the stuff that is digitally manipulated. That's bizarre to me. Absolutely bizarre, but it's coming. It absolutely is coming. You just wait 10 years. You wait and see. And if I'm wrong, you know what? In 10 years, come back and throw it in my face and I'll go out and buy you a drink. All right. I'll apologize at that point, but I'm not wrong. You know I'm not. Okay, I went over on one. I'm sorry, I cheated on my format, but I had to finish that one up. Let's start a new segment. All right, Hawk Ridge. Okay, I don't even know why I put this on my list. I have always been a big fan of Old Spice deodorant. I don't know why. I like Old Spice. I like their up until a couple months ago, I used Swagger. Old Spice Swagger. I just really liked it. Then they came out with their new commercials for their animal themed ones, their adventure themed dangerous deodorants. There's a wolf one and a lion one and Hawk Ridge. I can't remember the names of the other ones, but Hawk Ridge, their hawk based apparently deodorant. And so I was in the store the other day and I didn't see the Swagger right away. And so I saw all the new animal-themed deodorants from Old Spice. I'm like, all right, you know what? Let me just try them. So I pull the caps off, and I'm smelling them there in the store. And the Hawk Ridge, oh, I like that one. Hawk Ridge has like a hint of vanilla in it. I love vanilla. I love the Hawk Ridge. It's a great scent, a good manly scent. But like I say, a hint of vanilla, very smooth, very, I like it. So I'm not nearly as manly or interesting as the men in the commercials, but I assume it's just a matter of time. I just need time to absorb it. So I'll get there. See, I told you that one'd be quick. Reset. Here we go again. I am so damn fat. That's the title of this one. I am so damn fat. I'm not the heaviest I've ever been. All right. Once upon a time, I was 293 pounds. Me and my brother and our friend, who was our roommate in college, we were all getting to be the same level of morbidly obese. This is about 10 years ago. And so we all decided we'd have a weight loss contest. And then before the contest started, I'm like, you know what? In the few days I've got left, I am going to gorge myself. I'm going to bloat up with salt and just be horribly bloated. And then that way when I start, I'll have this little head start as I lose all that initial water weight, all this, whatever my reasoning was. Doesn't make any difference. So I packed on like an extra 5 pounds at the end there, but I was already pretty heavy at the time. So 293 is where I started that one. Now, I lost 50, 60 pounds back then, and I have probably four times in my life I've lost 50 or 60 pounds, and then eventually it all creeps back on, and I hate myself for it and all this. But I've just gotten to the point where I'm at 273, and I'm just starting to lose a little bit of weight now. I've been really good about my diet for a little while, trying to get more exercise. I'm working on it. But it was just getting to the point where, oh, I can feel that the acid reflux is going to start again. I'm going to, God, I'm going to wind up being diabetic if I don't change my ways. So 273 is where I was when I started this. I was at 270 this morning. I'll keep you guys posted if I feel it's interesting and relevant. But I'm working on it, you know. But I've done this before. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And even when it does work, eventually I lose ground. So I got to try and be better about it. But I'm working on it. So, you know. Just to humanize me, I'll share with you. You know. Let's see. Reset. Walking Dead. You guys watch Walking Dead? All right, better than that. Have you read Walking Dead? Oh, God, I feel so complete now. I love Walking Dead. I've watched the first three seasons, and season four is coming out relatively soon, I think. And I really enjoy it. Me and my wife watch that together. Love Walking Dead. It's a great zombie story. And at the end of season three, I'm sitting there saying, all right, come on, we've got to do something. You've got to go somewhere with this. If you don't start going somewhere, we've got real issues because, you know, there's all the initial zombie horror that we've seen plenty of movies where you do the horror of realizing, oh, God, zombies. Okay. And then we've also done many more survival oriented, the okay, we've had zombies. What are we doing about it? How do we survive? How do people just get by in a zombie world? And other than the book World War Z, not the movie, other than the book World War Z, I've never really seen much about, you know, where do you go? Where do we rebuild civilization? Where do we do something about it? And we haven't, Walking Dead has not at this point in the show, at the end of season three, hasn't gotten to the point of rebuilding civilization, but at least it's giving us a positive outlook at the end. I mean, it's still, you know, a horrifying land of zombies, but I like the way Walking Dead explores the human condition. I like the way they explore how people would actually react. Well, not how they'd actually react, but a dramatization of that. And so as much as we love Walking Dead, my wife got me the first compendium. So it's like the first 48 issues of the comic book in a big compendium. And I burned through that in no time. Oh, it was so good. And here was the disappointing part. I got right to the end of the compendium, and it ends, and it varies. It differs wildly from the TV show in some aspects, but it ends at essentially the same point where season three of the show ends. So I finished the compendium and the TV show, and both of them, oh, there's no progress. I haven't gotten anywhere. Damn it. All right, but then I got compendium two, and so now I'm up to issue 96 of the comics. And the comic is just blowing the TV series away. The way it deals with the psychology of surviving zombie apocalypse is just amazing. How people react and the things that they will do, it's just, I highly recommend it. If you haven't read Walking Dead, the comic, then I highly recommend it. Go out and pick up the graphic novels or pick up the compendiums. The compendium's the cheapest way to do it. That's what I did. Got it off of Amazon. But go out and pick them up and try them because it is really, really powerful stuff. It is great. I'm passing them along to my oldest son, and then when he gets done, I'm going to try and force my next son to read them because, man, they're just entertaining. See? Perfect. Here we go. All right. Oh, all right. I told you how much I love Kumail Nanjiani. Kumail is awesome. He's a stand-up comic. He's a comic. He's a comedy writer. And I've seen him places, you know, on TV here and there. He's one of the stars of Silicon Valley now, which I have not seen. But where I know Kumail from is I started watching him on Harmontown. And then, based on Harmontown, I like him enough that I checked out The Indoor Kids, which is a nerd podcast that Kumail and his wife, Emily Gordon, host of the Indoor Kids together, and it is ostensibly a video game podcast. That seems to be their main focus is video games, but it's just all nerd stuff. And, you know, they talk about all kinds of things, and they have cool guests on, and it's just really enjoyable. So I enjoy listening to that. And then Kumail started a podcast called The X-Files Files, and it's brilliant. It's really a lot of fun. I have been listening from the beginning. I am not caught up to where he is because here's the problem with X-Files Files. He is watching the whole point of the podcast. He's watching the X-Files from the beginning and then reviewing the episodes on his podcast. And he's usually reviewing two episodes per podcast. He'll bring on a guest. He has a different guest every time. But all of them have to be X-Files fans or X-Files related or something. And then the two of them together will talk about these two most recent episodes. And big bonus, he skips the crappy ones. Oh, that's the best. So he's skipping the crappy ones. He's only giving us stuff that either is really relevant to the ongoing overarching mythology and storyline, or ones that he just thinks are really good episodes, or ones that, even if they're not the best episodes, are ones that have something really valuable to learn from them, something in how the show has developed or in how the characters develop or something. And it's just fascinating. I absolutely love it. And here's the thing. I never watched X-Files when I was young. I had just gotten married, was just having kids, and even though I am smack dab in the middle of the target demographic for the X-Files, I knew what it was, but I never watched it. I just never had time to get into it back then. And I've always wished I did because X-Files is huge. X-Files by season 3, 4, 5 became hugely popular. And so I always regretted that I never had a chance to get into it. Well, now Kumail is going to walk me through the best parts of it. This is awesome. So if you've got time, listen to the X-Files Files. It's totally worth your time. Start from the beginning. Like I say, I think he's into season 2 by now. I'm only just getting to the end of season 1 is where I'm leaving off. And there have been some brilliant shows. I am just amazed, even 20 years later, how good this show really is. I mean, this is powerful acting, really good writing. I mean, there's some hackneyed stuff in there, obviously. Every show has its ups and downs. And they've got some misses. No big deal. Overall, great show. Which brings me to concerts. Oh, man. This summer, I got to see Lindsey Stirling in concert. Lindsey Stirling, violinist. I think she was originally on America's Got Talent or something like that is where she first came to national attention. But Lindsey Stirling is adorable, really talented. She's a violinist and dancer, and she's just fun to watch, and she's just a sweet girl, and we had a great time. We drove down to Omaha to an outdoor arena, and we watched Lindsey Stirling, and we had an awesome time. Love Lindsey Stirling. And I also saw Theory of a Dead Man again this summer. So Theory of a Dead Man's kind of more hard rock kind of stuff. But they have – what I like about Theory of a Dead Man is they have kind of a ska mentality to them. Not in the way their music sounds. It's not at all ska music. But the ska music that I like Real Big Fish and bands like that, is music that – even though they're usually talking about horrible things and how much life sucks and how bitter and jaded they are, ska is always upbeat about it. They're always happy. Man, the songs just sound so positive and happy and dancey. Oh, let's go. And Theory of a Dead Man is like that. They have really upbeat songs. It's hard rock, but really upbeat songs about how much relationships suck, how much they hate you in particular, how much we hate your girlfriend, how much, you know, I mean, it's that same kind of mentality. And I like that. I like that attitude. I like happy music with dark lyrics. It's fun for me. And so we saw Theory of a Dead Man back at the, Clay County Fair in Iowa, 2 years ago, and enjoyed the crap out of them. They just are entertaining. They know how to put on a show on stage. They're really good. And so here they were. They came to our town. Like literally, I don't have to go anywhere. How often do I get a concert that, I mean, I live miles away from anything, so I wind up, if I go to a concert, it means after the concert's over, I either have a hotel room or I've got an hour and a half, 2 hour drive home at midnight, and it's just, ugh. And it was just so refreshing to, we watched this concert and had a great time, and then we got done, and it's like, all right, 5 minutes later, I'm home in bed, and we're done. It was awesome. Great time. So, those were the concerts I saw. I would like to see, because you guys have all heard Weird Al's new music. He's got two or three really, really good songs off the new album, and I haven't paid enough attention to the rest of them to know how much I like them at first blush. I'm not really excited, but a lot of his songs are ones that you need to listen to and let them sink in, so I'll give him a chance. But you know how I love Weird Al. I have seen him in concert before. I would go see him again in a heartbeat. He is the only... I only have a few words left. Weird Al is the only artist that I would pay full price tickets for. I mean, I go to $25, $30 concerts. I go to $10 concerts now. But Weird Al, I'd be willing to pay the $60 for him. I can't wait to see if he's on tour. So he hasn't announced dates yet, but coming up soon. All right, enough wasting time. Let's hold on. Restart. Where does that put me? Oh, Snake. This is the other game I'm playing on my tablet and phone. I'm playing Snake, the original Snake. You guys remember this game? I love Snake. Pong was the first game I ever played, the first video game that I remember. I remember Pong, and I remember seeing Asteroids and maybe Space Invaders in the arcade cabinets. I remember seeing them somewhere, like at a bowling alley or a roller rink or something. But I remember seeing them when I was really young. But Pong was the first one I actually played. The second video game that I remember playing is Snake. And if you don't know Snake, I can't imagine how you don't know Snake. But if you don't know Snake, it's just a snake that you guide around the screen, and you have little dots that you pick up and eat. And each dot that you get makes your snake a little bit longer. And then the next dot makes your snake a little bit longer until eventually you're getting where your snake doesn't really fit much on the screen, and so you have to keep twisting and turning around to not bump into anything. Because if you hit a wall or if you hit yourself, you're dead. Simplest damn game in the world. And I love that game. I was hypnotized by it when I first encountered it in second grade, third grade, I can't remember. It just hypnotized me. And since then, I haven't really thought about it much. Every once in a while, every few years, you'll encounter Snake somewhere and go, oh, yeah, that's right, Snake, I remember that. But now I've actually downloaded it onto my phone. I love the thing. Oh, man, I probably play two games of Snake a day. And then they don't take long. I mean, sometimes you wind up wiping out in the first 30 seconds. But usually if I get a good game, you know, get it up to high score territory for me, it's usually like a 5-minute game. And so, yeah, twice a day, nice and easy. I love Snake. I can't even sit here and recommend it to you. I mean, because you know what Snake is, and it's not necessarily for everybody. But if you haven't played Snake before, if you haven't played it in a long time, go download it. It'll take you 10 seconds. Try it out. See if it's any good. See if it's as good as you remember it. Because for me, it was. It totally was. And I'm playing it on, I mean, the version of it that I have is but simple. It's very old school with the worst graphics possible. And the controls are an imitation calculator down below. So I have a number keypad down below that I have to tap in on this imitation number keypad on my smartphone. And it's just brilliant and fun. I have a great time with it. Love it. All right. That one's up. Look at that. We saved a little time, guys. Reset. What's next? Oh, smart TV and Roku. I'm going to need a drink after that. My throat's starting to hurt. Here's the deal. I was telling you I want to get a smart TV. And so I got a smart TV, and I love the smart TV, everything about it. The whole concept is spectacular. My smart TV comes with buttons right on the controller that say Netflix and Hulu and Amazon. Oh, it's brilliant. This is what I need. I hit a button on my smart TV remote. It takes me straight to YouTube, and I watch Bravest Warriors on YouTube on my TV the way the world was meant to be. I watch Rick and Morty on YouTube, on my smart TV. I love this thing. And then I hit a problem. Okay. As much as I really, really like the smart TV, my cable company, who is raping me, my cable company doesn't work well with most smart TVs. They say that, well, if you have a smart TV, if you have a TV that is digital cable ready, you should just be able to hit these buttons and blah, blah, blah. And nope, doesn't work. Does not work. I need to use the the cable company's cable box. If I don't have their little adapter box, I can't get any channels on my stupid smart TV. So, okay. I have my very convenient smart TV. And then I also have to have my, cable box with my cable remote. All right. I guess that's fine. And then I hit another snag. Turns out that the smart TV doesn't recognize when load speeds are down. So when I'm streaming video, it doesn't recognize that the stream is a little bit slow. So if the stream doesn't quite keep up, then it just pauses, waits till it buffers enough, and then it starts again. And my cable company, who I mentioned, a bunch of rapists, I don't mean to promote rape culture, I'm not trying to be, but I'm telling you, they're mean, horrible people who are taking advantage of me, not giving me my money's worth. I hate the cable company, but they're the only ones that can provide broadband internet to me, so what am I going to do, right? All right, well, the cable speed I have, no matter what they advertise, if I have a high-def streaming channel on Netflix, if I'm watching a high-def movie on Netflix and my son is playing a video game in the living room, multiplayer online, oh, guess what? It can't keep up with both of those at the same time. That high-def video will just piss out every single time, and you wind up pausing over and over. And so what happens is if I had my Roku box, the Roku box recognizes that, and it adjusts itself down, so you never have a break in your Roku viewing experience. Oh, bottom line, I had to put my Roku box back onto my smart TV, so now my smart TV is just this beautiful screen with these great controls, but I still have to have the cable connected, and I still have to have Roku connected. It's still better than what I had, but could be better. Next one. I don't know where I am here. Oh, I own a fleet of cars. That's what this one says. Did you know that? I own a fleet of cars. I have so many vehicles, it's just silly. And I remember when I was younger, seeing people who, you know, knowing about families who owned, you know, owning three cars seemed ridiculous. Four, five, six, just, what possesses these people? They can't possibly need that many vehicles. Well, I do own them now, and I do need them. That's the weird part. I got four drivers in my house. Well, I mean, one's off at college, so his car is not always here, but it was all summer long. And so we got four drivers. We got four vehicles, one for each driver. And, oh, by the way, my wife's van was on its last legs, absolute last legs. And so we wound up getting a perfect deal. We couldn't pass it up. We got her a new minivan. And so she's driving that one, but the old one is still good. And, you know, we've gotten to the point now with four vehicles now, it's actually nice to have a spare because, you know, it's just way too often that one of them's in the shop for something or one of them happens to be down for whatever reason. Nice to have that spare vehicle. So I now have five. So my wife parks in the driveway. We only have space in the driveway for one vehicle. And then on the grass in the empty lot across the street, we have our other four cars. We line them up nice and neat. And it's like my own little car lot. Oh, man. It is just bizarre to own that many vehicles. And yet, I do, because apparently I'm a wealthy man. That must be what this means, right? That's it for that topic. I'm done. What's next? Reset. Go. Forum check-in. Let's go see if anyone else posted. Refresh. Nope, still just Stan. Hold on. Let me tell Stan. Yeah, see? Listening to me typing? Is this great podcasting? What? This is awesome radio. All right. And comment, go. All right, we did our forum check-in. All right, back to where we were. Let's see. That's an end for that segment. See, I have to reset the timer. Go, go. Captain, my captain. That's what it says here. Yeah, obviously, Robin Williams just died like 2 days ago, 3 days ago. I don't remember. And, Robin Williams kind of overrated, kind of a hack, he's the kind of guy that for years now, I've never really thought a whole lot about him. Because again, he's so needy sometimes and he's so, when you let Robin be Robin, he's just so over the top and so just too much. It's too much Robin, right? And I've liked some of his stuff. I like some of his serious roles. When I was a kid, I thought his stand-up was amazing. I loved Mork and Mindy. I loved his stand-up, but, you know, I was a kid then. And so it would not have occurred to me, and I've said this in many venues, but I'll repeat it here. It would not have occurred to me that Robin Williams' death would affect me at all. If you had me make a list of all the celebrities whose death might affect me in some way, Robin Williams wouldn't have been on there. It's just not something I would have thought of. And yet, Robin Williams hangs himself and it hits me. It hits me close to home, and there's just something about it that I think it's because he was, by all accounts, a pretty nice dude. He was supportive and helpful, and he was there for other people. And yeah, he had his personal problems. He had his demons, and he had his drug addiction and his depression and, cheated on his wife. And I mean, he had personal problems. But again, in the grand scheme, on average, he seemed a decent guy. He seemed like a really sweet guy, and the people who knew him loved him. And so I guess, I don't know, maybe it's something about the way he went out that depression, it's just sad. It's just sad that somebody is brought to that. Someone with so much talent and so much money and resources and so many people around him who loved him and respected him, and yet he's brought to that. And it is a sad thing. And I don't know. It's something about mental illness. It's like with Philip Seymour Hoffman. Philip Seymour Hoffman, just one of Yancey was saying something about this too. Philip Seymour Hoffman died not too long ago. And again, it was an addiction. It was a mental illness. It seemed like such a horrific waste of talent that he had to go out like that. And I don't know. Maybe it speaks to something that mental illness is still not treated on par with other illnesses. I mean, as someone else said, yeah, even alcoholism is treated better than mental illness in this nation. I'm going to give this topic just a couple more seconds to give it the time it deserves. But it seems like as a whole, society is more forgiving of alcoholism than they are of someone who suffers from severe depression. You know, that, oh, well, alcoholism is a disease. Alcohol, they need treatment. And yet depression, people don't seem to know how to deal with it. They don't seem to know how to address it. And I guess, I don't know, maybe I'm just making things up to justify why I'm sad about Robin Williams. But it hit close to home. And I'm just sorry the guy had to die. It's just sad. So there you go. Let's move on to the next one. Let's do something happy again. Oh, God, I hope this is a happy topic. Let's see. It's not really happy. Millicent. Millicent was a micropayment system years ago that was intended, they were looking for a new scheme of how to fund the internet in general. And they realized that, you know, you can't expect people to pay a subscription to every single website that they want to visit. Relying on advertising seems to drive things in a certain direction. When people are relying on clickbait and they rely on advertising in the way they do, you know, that skews how things are presented. And so micropayments were one way that was considered for handling the internet. The idea that, you know, you wanted to go in somewhere and just get one page view. All right, 1 cent or one fraction of a cent. It didn't have to be much. I mean, look, somebody writes a really funny article on a really popular site and everyone who clicks on it just pays 1 penny for reading that article. Well, you know, you rack up 10,000 views, there's $100 for your article. All right. You rack up 100,000 views however many it's going to be. And that's how people would get paid. And the problem is Millicent was working on that one. Well, two problems with it. One, people got angry. The whole idea of, because the internet's supposed to be free. We've already got that in our heads. The internet's free. It's supposed to be free. The idea that I have to pay a penny for anything, you're going to charge me a penny? How dare you? And that caused a real backlash against it. And two, we haven't yet figured out a great scheme for collecting micropayments online. Because if you go through credit cards, if you go through traditional services, well, they want a fee. They want their cut of every bit of money that goes anywhere. Credit cards take, you know, through our debit cards and our credit cards, they're taking, you know, just 3% off the top of every single transaction in this country. They're just taking a cut of every single bit of money that moves for any reason. It's crazy. Absolutely crazy. And so micropayments make it much harder to collect that cut. You know what I'm saying? Like suddenly, you know, the credit cards have to be in a position of saying, well, once you get an aggregate of, you know, once you get up to, you know, more than $100 or more than $1,000, then we're going to have to collect our taxes on your income. Who knows how. Anyway, just didn't work well. But it's the kind of thing that I'd almost like to see it. Because now, I mean, nowadays, hell, micropayment now, there's companies out there on the internet that are counting anything under $10 as a micropayment. Really? You're going to tell me $9 is a micropayment? No, you're crazy. But I would still like to see something not mandatory necessarily, but my last few words. Maybe a tipping service, like the Facebook like button, but it's an electronic tip. I click it, you get 2 cents. You know, something like that. Triggers. I'm gonna skip this one. Trigger warnings on stuff. You need to warn people that, hey, before we get into this, just be aware that we're going to be discussing this sort of topic, and this could be a traumatic trigger for people who have this condition or people who have been through this ordeal. And anyway, there was some heated discussion about it online. I put it on my list. Now I don't care so much about the topic. Let's skip that one. Pathfinder. I don't even know what I have to say about Pathfinder other than I am having a great time. We're still playing our online Rise of the Rune Lords campaign, so thank you, Darks. You're awesome. We're having a great time. We're up to like session 22, 23, something like that. We're going to play again tonight, and I couldn't be more excited. Love Pathfinder. Love Roll20. Just as a reminder, Roll20.com. That's the system we use as our online tabletop to play online games. So shout out. I can't say, I'm not allowed to say shout out because my cousin Rob says it's outdated. It's very, very 90s. But seriously, Roll20 is spectacular. Pathfinder is wonderful. Love playing this game. I think I have some interesting things to say about it, but I haven't organized any thoughts on it as to specifically what's going on right now, other than we're just finishing book one, which I thought we were just finishing book one, like, you know, 3 or 4 sessions ago, but man, there's always just one more little thing. But hey, I'm fourth level, and that's all that counts. I'm fourth level, and I can't, a fourth level bard? Why would anyone be excited about being a fourth level bard? Well, you wouldn't know because you're not me. But, that was quick. What did I do? I know what I did. You know what? We'll just take that as done. All right. Next one is Princess Jellyfish. I always looking for anime shows that will tickle me, and I try a bunch of them, and most of them I watch 2 episodes, 3 episodes, and then I'm done. I just get bored, or I just never have the motivation to get back to it. But Princess Jellyfish was really entertaining. At the very end, when it's all said and done, I can't say necessarily that it was good, because I don't know that it was, but I do know that it entertained me and that I was really glad I watched it. And I highly recommend it. Princess Jellyfish is available free on Netflix streaming. You should watch it. It's only 11 episodes. It's not even like it'll take you that long. I mean, we're talking, you know, what, 3 hours worth of material total? And it's just, it's fun. It is a group of, nerd girls who live in their, what they call their little convent. And they're all withdrawn from society and lost in their little nerd fetishes. And, something happens to shake that up. And it's fascinating. And the way it plays with cliques and culture and gender roles and expectations and family, and there's a bunch of stuff in it, and it's interesting. And by the end of it, I was hoping it would make some sort of obvious statement, something that, because you don't want your traditional ugly duckling story where, oh, you know what, once she learns to come out of her shell and, you know, the popular kid in school can give her a makeover and turn her into one of the popular people and blah, 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 blah. I don't want, you know, at the end that, oh, well, once you realize that you can come out of your shell and be really pretty, then suddenly you can be successful and popular and everything will work out for you. And I don't want that traditional storyline. And at the end of it, it felt unsatisfying because it felt like I got some of that. I don't know. I don't want to reveal anything because it's not really. But it also, I think the problem I have with it is I got to the end of these 11 episodes and it feels like it was setting me up for season 2. It feels like there should be another round, and either they're not going to make it, or they never intended to make it, or it just hasn't been released here in the States yet, or I have no idea what, but it feels like this was the setup for an ongoing storyline. And so they left a bunch of things unresolved or just hanging out in the open there, because, well, there's more to come. And so, like I say, don't necessarily know that it was good because it does all the horrible anime things that I normally hate. Really, really over-exaggerated emotions. I mean, reactions that are so off the wall that it just makes you want to pull your eyes out. And yet worth watching. That's all I say, worth watching. God, I hope you guys can hear the timer from where I've got it set up over there, because otherwise I just sound like if you can't hear that beeping going off, then you think I'm just turning into a crazy person whenever I end one of these topics. So I hope this has been coming through the whole time. All right, new topic. Let's see. Talk Like a Pirate Day. Talk Like a Pirate Day. Why do I have that down here? I, for the life of me, can't figure it out. I mean, it's September 19th. I know when Talk Like a Pirate Day is because it's September 19th, because it's the same day as Hermione Granger's birthday. But Mike, why do you know Hermione Granger's birthday? Well, because my brother and I once had a campaign. We were going to do, it was a presidential campaign, Ron Weasley for Muggle President. And in order to do Ron Weasley for Muggle President, back in, God, was this 2008? It had to have been. To do Ron Weasley for Muggle President, we had to have, he set up an online blog account, social media account for Ron Weasley, and I set up one for Hermione Granger, who would act as his press liaison, his manager, promoter. In order to set up the account, well, I needed to be as accurate as I could about Hermione Granger, so I had to look up her name, her full name, and it's Jane is her middle name. I had to know her birthday. It's September 19th. Because I wanted the details to be right enough so that when we started doing our little fake presidential campaign, I wanted to at least look real, or real-ish. And we never did carry through on it. It was a brilliant plan. It fell through. But anyway, that's why I know that Talk Like a Pirate Day is the 19th. But I have no idea why it's on this list. I have no idea why I wanted to talk about it. Not a clue. All right, so let's reset and go to the next one. Let's see. Next one is, oh, History Rage. Yeah, you know that rage, that History Rage that I mentioned in the last two episodes, so I didn't have quite enough time for it. I still don't have quite enough time for it. I'm going to let this one go because we're at an hour and a half now. And that means I want to devote some time to this one. So instead, I reset and it says, why am I not watching Guardians of the Galaxy now? Well, thanks to Stan, we already covered that one, which leaves the very last thing on the list. It says, check the forums one more time. All right. Check the forums. We hit refresh. And, oh. Oh, God, why would you do this? My brother Kyle posts up and says, what does blue taste like? Blue tastes like any other dog, really. The problem with blue is that the food coloring actually gives it a little bit of a bitter taste. Magenta is more to my liking. Magenta, you can just do just a few drops of red to get that nice, the rich pinkish color that magenta has. But blue is just a little much. I mean, not that it's not, you know, it's dog, you know, it's like anything else. But, all right, this joke isn't going anywhere for me. I'm sorry. I got nothing on that, man. Let me pull up the credits. What do we do next? Yeah, time for a recap. GLaDOS?
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2014 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk, and my bumper music this week is non-existent because I didn't do any segments that required bumpers. If you feel like doing something nice for this podcast, head on over to iTunes and write me a nice review, or check out my Facebook page at facebook.com/nerdprideradio. Stop at the Facebook page and click like. It's just 9 seconds out of your busy, busy day. You can do that for a friend. Or you can find me on Twitter now, at nerdprideradio. Don't forget to check out the free games I have available on our free games page. Instant Game, Animal Ball Melee, Sandbox Hill, 2/3 of a dozen others, all free. All the time. If you want to contact me, you can always email me at mike@nerdprideradio.com, and I promise I will actually respond to you. But to be totally honest, you know the very best way to talk to me is to come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. You sign up there, you send me a message, we will hang out together, we'll have fun. All right, R2, I can't let the whole show go by without a Podomatic. This is number 24 from R2-D2, and he says, oh, it's from Talvin. Talvin says, name three things you liked about first edition AD&D. Oh, that will require some thought on my part. Oh, man, because I want to do this one justice, because I loved first edition AD&D. But here's the thing. The stuff I loved about it was what I like about most role-playing games. And I mean, there's a reason that we have new versions, and there's a reason that I mean, second edition was horrible, but third edition worked really, really well for me. Pathfinder works even better for me. We improved on the original. We streamlined it. We took out some of the unnecessary stuff. We put in better stuff, made it more balanced. So, I mean, I loved first edition D&D because it was role-playing. It was adventure role-playing for the very first time. Wizards and dragons and dwarves and elves, and it was awesome. I can't even begin to convey how much fun we had and how much I loved D&D, how much Advanced Dungeons & Dragons, it was as if I had found a home. It was, the minute I got into it, I realized that this was mine. This was for me. This is what I was born to do. I love Advanced Dungeons & Dragons for all of that. Now, is there anything that I specifically liked about it that even today, looking back, I go, oh, you know what I wish we still had? You know what would be really cool? I can't think of any off the top of my head, because, I mean, when I think about Advanced Dungeons & Dragons and I think about comparing it to Pathfinder or modern Dungeons & Dragons, there's so much there that was just so wrong. I mean, level caps for non-humans, having to look up all your stuff on a chart instead of just doing regular calculations, I don't know. I'll tell you what I did love. I loved the treasure tables. I loved going in and getting, you know, type O treasure or, you know, type S, T, and L. And then you'd go and you'd look up those letters on the table and you'd wind up rolling the dice and figuring out, you know, exactly this much gold, exactly this much platinum. And, oh, look, here's all the rare artifacts and all, here's the magic items and here's the gems. And, and there was something really satisfying about that, something that, that satisfied my instant game vibe. I love rolling up random stuff on tables. I mean, even for me, the random encounters tables, there was something appealing about the random encounters table. In fact, you know what? Everything that I like about Advanced Dungeons and Dragons that I think that I'm kind of nostalgic for, the treasure types, the original treasure types, and I know you still get, you know, treasure is still a listing and you still go through the whole process, but I don't know, there was something about that that was really satisfying. But also the random encounter tables, I know they're dumb. I know random encounter tables are terrible. And in fact, the idea of random encounters at all, it's just, I mean, but back then it wasn't about the story. We were about the combat. We were about, you know, kill stuff, get loot. That was really everything that was going on. So having a random encounter table just helped throw fuel on that kill stuff, get loot fire. It was great. And I loved having the more complicated the tables, the better. That there was, you know, you have tables for different environments. You have tables for different levels of characters. You have tables for different. Oh, it was great. Great. I loved those. But the most fun of all, and this is first edition Advanced Dungeons and Dragons, the Grievous Wounds table, what we now know to be critical hits, and there's a whole codified system for it, was originally the Grievous Wounds table. And it was never, as far as I know, it was never an official rule in first edition D&D, but it did come out in Dragon Magazine. And I remember seeing something about Grievous Wounds tables, and eventually I never had the one out of the magazine, but I wound up constructing my own, and having a Grievous Wounds table was amazing with all of the horrible things that could happen on a Grievous Wound, now critical hit, obviously. All the terrible things that could happen, the bleeding damage, the charisma damage from scars, the, you know, it was just cool. I loved doing that. And I understand that there are such things now as well. I can get a critical hit deck from Paizo that works with Pathfinder and gives me that same, the same elements of the Grievous Wounds table, but puts them on a deck of cards. There are tables out there, and I know I could just go find them and download them. I just haven't, and I don't know why. I mean, I know they're still available for me, but I don't know. Something really nostalgic about that. I love that, and I haven't used the Grievous Wounds table since college, so it's been like 20 years. But I think I've talked about this before. When I was in college, I invented the critical hit system to use with my Grievous Wounds table because I always thought it was horrible that every 20 you rolled wound up doing a Grievous Wound. Every 20 did something spectacular, well, which meant, yeah, but the goblins can only hit on a 20, so that means every hit they do does double damage and a roll on the table? That's not fair. And so to make it more fair, I went with a confirmed system. I mean, it's exactly the same as the modern critical hit system in D&D 3 and Pathfinder. I mean, exactly the same. I just decided that, look, if you roll a 20, that means you have a chance at a Grievous Wound. Just roll, and if you hit again on a second roll, ta-da, Grievous Wound. And I'm not claiming to have invented it because it's an obvious idea, I think, and that's why there was a parallel development of it. But I certainly did create it independently. I just, because it made sense for us at the time. And so when I got to D&D 3rd edition and I saw the system for critical hits, I was so pleased, so happy, because it just confirmed that, hey, I had a good idea. Look, my idea was so good that someone else came up with it. All right, cool. And that's the end.